Welcome, everyone. This is Catherine, and I'm so excited about our seminar today with our guests, Creating Spiritual Partnership, The Four Foundations of Soul Love with Gary Zukav and Linda Francis. And I'm going to introduce them to you and then turn over the microphone so because these two have so much to share with us. Gary Zukav is the author of four consecutive New York Times best-selling books, including The Dancing Wooly Masters, and Seat of the Soul. I know that many of you already have heard of him and are big fans of his work. You may know him from seeing him on the Oprah Winfrey Show, as he has appeared 36 times. And he is also here today with his wonderful wife and spiritual partner, Linda Francis. Together, Linda and Gary wrote The Heart of the Soul, Emotional Awareness, and The Mind of the Soul, Responsible Choice. And Linda has also been a guest on the esteemed Oprah Winfrey Show. And Linda is also the co-founder, along with Gary, of their Seat of the Soul Institute. And they're here today to share about their work together as spiritual partners, and in particular about the four foundations of soul love. But I just want to say personally, what I really love about both of them as I'm getting to know them is, you know, they're so extremely accomplished, both of them. And so I think, you know, one might consider them the ultimate power couple, but they're powerful in a very different way. They teach about this different kind of power. It is a relational power. It is a power that is centered in the heart, that which they call authentic power. And to know them is to be able to feel their hearts and to feel their deep humility and their devotion to truth and to goodness and service. And so they are a joy to know and to have here with us in our community. And I know that one of the things that is so exceptional that had me pursue them to have them become guests in our community is that so many of those of you who are listening do not have healthy role models for what it is that you're standing to create. You intuitively know that something is possible here, but you might not have it in your own history, and you might not see it in your own family and friends that you're surrounded with. And so the gift of having Gary and Linda in our community is not even just what they say, but who they are together. And so, Gary and Linda, I just want to welcome you to Calling in the 149 Days to Love.
Oh, thank you so much, Catherine.
Thank you, Catherine. It's wonderful, really, full of wonder to be here.
Well, we're so happy to have you. And I know that you're going to be sharing a lot with us about authentic power and about these four really, you know, characteristics of what it is to create this foundation of soul love. But I wonder if you could just start us out by sharing about your love and your relationship and how you met and came together as a couple.
Oh, we'd be glad to do that. I'll start with me. And I think because I know that everyone, I think we all, in some way, want to have people in our lives, and especially one other person who is really our spiritual partner. I'm going to use that word, which I'll talk about later. But it's really a partnership between equals for the purpose of spiritual growth. And it's not that you can't have more than one spiritual partner, meaning that there are lots of different forms of spiritual partnership, but basically it's a relationship of integrity. And so when I want to start. Let me start with kind of my background. With relationships, I'll say with men.
Yeah,
and that
great.
Was to yeah, and that was really trying my best to find the right one for many, many years. I was married when I was very young, and that didn't work out, which it couldn't have even from the beginning because I had no idea how to be in a relationship and. Relationship was not healthy, but I didn't really understand that at the time. So I did have the courage to leave that relationship that I knew wasn't, you know, that it was going to not be healthy for me. And I didn't really even know why it wouldn't be healthy. at the time, but I just knew that it wasn't, and it would not be a good thing for my life. So that took a lot of courage to leave that relationship, but I didn't really leave it because I blamed him for many years. I blamed it was his fault that things turned out the way they did. And then I kept trying to find men who were the right man. And I went on with a series of relationships over a long period of time, trying to find the right man. And then I could see that wasn't the right one, so I would go on to the next, always looking for someone to fill the hole that I had in me, that I didn't feel like I was good enough myself. And so I read a book called The Seat of the Soul, which is Gary's first book. I read it in 1989 when it was published. I was obviously guided to it because I had no idea. Why I was, but I read it. It was so important to me. And so what happened is after I read that book, I thought, wow, I really want to live in this way. I want to live authentically. And I could see that I hadn't been at all, and I'd been looking for the right one. And so then the universe offered me another opportunity to really look at relationship. And again, I was looking for the right one, and I had picked out another relationship. And in that relationship, I was really brought to my knees because, again, what happened is I felt betrayed by this person. He was dating other people, actually engaged to marry someone else when I was with him. So that brought me to a really big change in my life. And I used that opportunity not to blame him, but to look at myself and why I'd created this happening. So as I did that, I knew at that point that I could actually have a healthy relationship. But the most important thing was my relationship with myself. And so I began to really work on my relationship with myself and loving myself and not worrying about whether I could find someone else. I knew I was the right one, and I needed to be the right one. And I was open to relationship, but it was okay if I had one or not. And so then the universe offered the opportunity for me to meet Gary, to actually have a meeting with him that I recognized as the universe offering me this opportunity. And so I decided to take that opportunity and begin to learn even more about myself, about the things that kept me from having even a deeper relationship with myself, the parts of me that were based in fear, that kept me from loving, like the parts that felt jealous, the parts that felt that I still felt that I wasn't the right one, the ones that felt inferior, and all of that. So I began to work through those parts of me that were based in fear as I was in relationship with Gary. And so we began what we called a spiritual partnership. So in other words, it's a partnership between equals, as I said, for the purpose of spiritual growth. My purpose was to learn about myself, to grow myself, and to support my beloved when I could. And we've been doing that ever since for the last over 23 years. And it's been a very powerful time for me. It's been the most growth-filled time because I keep looking at myself, even though it's painful to see things in me that are based in fear. If I see them, then I can actually not act on them and act from love instead. So our relationship has been one of my learning and growing about and growing myself and supporting my beloved. And it's such an amazing thing to do. And I think I want to turn it over to Gary now and ask what his part has been.
Well, thank you, beloved. That's beautiful.
Hmm.
My relationship with relationship was pretty shallow for most of my life. And it wasn't until I was in my 40s, late 40s, that I actually began to experience some a deeper understanding of relationship. I was alone most of my life. I liked doing things. Of course, I had friends. I liked to do things with them. But I didn't have any real meaningful relationships as I understood them, certainly not with women. That was almost always just sexual. And then I was living in this small community in Northern California, Mount Shasta, which is named after the mountain there. And I decided that I think I would like to open myself to having a partner. So I wrote a list of things that qualities that I thought I would want that partner to have. And then I pretty much forgot about it. I had done that either before or after that. I had checked out all of the people that I knew, all of the women that I knew in this small community, and it didn't take long because it was a small community, and also because we knew each other. It was a beautiful, lovely community, and I knew all the women there, but none of them seemed to be what my partner would be. So I just let it go, and then I was invited to speak at a retreat close to Mount Shasta by some friends of ours, of mine, who also happened to be friends of Linda's. So we wound up at this retreat together. I was only going to be there for one evening to give a little talk, but I wound up staying for longer than that. And I met Linda in an interesting way because one of our friends said, Gary, do you know Linda Francis? She's a chiropractor and my back is really hurting. Would you please tell her that, because she said she'd give me a treatment, because Linda had offered to give everyone at this event chiropractic treatments if they needed them. So when I finally found out...
The presenters.
Oh, the presenters.
Yeah.
I'm still learning. I'm glad I didn't start telling everyone. So,
but that's how generous she is in your heart and soul. That's how you see her.
Right. So I finally found her based on my friend's description. And I can't say that anything special happened except the fact that I wasn't attracted to her, and I noticed that. It was she was wearing sweats and had sort of a bowl haircut, the kind that monks in the Middle Ages had, I think, and she was barefoot. and I gave her the message. And then we started to find ourselves with each other at this event. For example, a friend of mine would save me a seat at a concert, and a friend of Linda's would do the same, and our two seats would be together. And so we started to get to know each other a little bit. And then there was one time, the one thing I noticed about her right away is that she gives these long hugs, two-minute hugs. And since this was a New Age retreat, there was a lot of people wearing white, a lot of people wearing robes, a lot of people giving long hugs, but I especially didn't like the idea of getting a long one from Linda. So one of those days, she gave me one of those long hugs, and it was a really interesting experience for me because it was a rather exciting, if you know what I mean. and I didn't want it to be exciting because I'd been a secular monk for a long time, I think about 7 years, and I especially didn't want hugs or becoming sexually excited to send any messages to the women that I knew, because it couldn't be the right message. It was one message that they might think or they might receive is that I'm open to a different kind of relationship with them, which I was not. And another might be, I don't want this kind of relationship with Gary, so I just think I'll not have one. And then I would lose a friend as a friend. So I had thought about this, so I had tried to make myself not feel excited when Linda gave me this hug. But what happened is I felt a tremendous pain in my first chakra, just under my coccyx. It was terribly painful. And so it wasn't something I was going to forget for a while. So later I asked Linda if she'd like to take a walk by a beautiful stream that ran through this retreat area. And I told her what had happened, and I told her what I thought what had happened was that I had tried to bypass my sexuality all of my life. One of the teachers that wasn't exactly my teacher, but I admired him a lot, was celibate. He was an old man, a Chan master. And so I thought, well, I'll be that for a while. But I didn't realize that he was celibate because it served what he was doing. But it didn't serve what I was doing. I was celibate because I was frightened of my sexuality. So we started to talk about those kind of things. And before the end of the retreat, we were talking about significant things like that. And then later she moved to Mount Shasta, not having anything to do with me. And we started to get together a little bit. And some of those times together were not bad. But at other times, they were a little painful. I wouldn't exactly know what to say or what I wanted to say or do. They weren't dates. She was just living in a cabin a little ways down a few roads from my little cabin. So we would connect now and then. And after about 6 months, the thought occurred to me, I think I'm in a relationship. Because whether our times together were comfortable or uncomfortable for me, I was always looking forward to the next time. And then Linda went to Europe to be with a teacher for a little while. And while she was gone, I realized that I wanted to live with her. And here's the thing that was really a surprise to me. That wasn't a big deal. It was so easy, like a breeze flowing or a gentle stream. I just discovered I wanted to live with Linda. So when she came back, I told her, and it turns out that she had a similar experience. And so she moved out of her little cabin and into my little cabin. And we've been learning about relationship and spiritual partnership ever since. And like Linda said, uh-huh. That's been 23 years ago. So we're still learning about spiritual partnership. It's a rich thing to do. You had talked to, so that's my story.
Yeah, and really? Catherine, I could say a lot more, but I also know that you have other things that you'd like to go.
Not really. I mean, I think what you're saying is so beautiful, and we're learning from it right there. I mean, I think that it kind of bodes for my next question, which is, okay, so how did you find your way to spiritual partnership? I mean, you know, we're kind of in the same age group. And I know that the modeling that we had for relationship was very role-based, and and I don't think people really had the inner development to create this kind of authentic relatedness. And so I'm wondering how you found your way there. It sounds like when I listened to the story, Gary, that you went right there by creating this authenticity in the dialogue, very truthful, very real, very self-reflective.
And that was one thing that was really impressive to me, Catherine, because I had never actually had a relationship with a man that was in integrity. I wasn't in integrity, and neither was the other person. But we didn't realize that. No, it was a role, like you said, it was a role that we were playing. And when Gary, first of all, I told you I had read The Seat of His Soul, so I knew that spiritual partnership was a possibility, a new relationship dynamic that was coming into being. I knew that, but it seemed so far away from me. And when Gary had the, courage to speak to me at the retreat the way that he did, he said several things that were so in integrity. I could tell he was just saying, "I don't want to hug you. I don't know why I want to push you away, and I know that there's something in me that wants to do that, but it's not about you." He would say that to me, and I'd go, "Wow, that's so curious that you could actually see that it really didn't have anything to do with me. It was something you were supposed to be learning about yourself." And I was so excited about someone speaking to me that way, and then letting me know that he had had this. He'd gotten excited when he hugged me, and he didn't want that to happen. And to be honest about that, that was just, to me, it was so refreshing to talk to someone about what was really going on with no second agenda, just saying what was happening. And I was really moved by that. And I also had a lot of things coming up for me because I knew the universe was connecting me with Gary, because when Gary told you that he had come up to me to ask about chiropractic treatment for a friend, one of the presenters at the event, at that moment, I knew the universe was connecting me with Gary. I just knew intuitively, and I thought, wow, what came into my mind was magic is happening here. And I was so surprised about it. I didn't think he didn't know anything about that, but I knew that. And so I knew that I was having some opportunity, and I didn't really know what that opportunity was, but I was open to seeing what that was about. And so as the retreat went on, I began to notice things that would happen, and then he would talk to me in real ways, which was really exciting to me. And I actually had been planning to move to Mount Shasta, and now I was coming to that retreat again, yet again, coming to Mount Shasta. I came all the time because it was such a powerful place for me to be on that mountain. And so what happened was I decided not to come actually move when I left the retreat, because I thought, I'm not going to go to Mount Shasta because of a man. Because I'd done that so often, I've been doing things, you know, so I can feel better about myself, to feel complete. And so I went home, and I went back to Oakland where I lived, and I woke up I'd been home a couple of days. I woke up one morning, and I realized I'm supposed to be moving to Mount Shasta. I knew so clearly I was supposed to move. And it didn't matter whether I was in a relationship or not with Gary. So I made my plans and I moved. And then we began this journey of learning how to be a spiritual partner to each other, how to be real, how to be authentic. And the first thing that I had to learn, you were talking about the four foundations of soul love, the four foundations of creating authentic power, the four foundations of being in a spiritual partnership. I could say it all that way. Well, the first one is commitment. And the very first commitment, the commitment part, I realized I thought that it was a commitment to the relationship. I thought I had to be committed to my relationship with Gary, and he had to be committed to the relationship with me. And I thought, well, I've been committed to relationships before. I'm not going to have a problem with that. And Gary really hasn't. He's been kind of by himself a lot, you know, in terms of relationships. Well, actually, Gary didn't really have a problem with that. And so I had to be with that myself. And I thought, why am I having such a hard time understanding commitment? And so I just was with it for actually a couple of months. I just kept meditating about it and wondering, what is this? Well, what I realized is that my commitment wasn't to my spirit, to my relationship or to anyone else. It was to my own spiritual growth, making that the highest priority. And if I made that the highest priority, then I would be able to have a healthier relationship with everyone. And so that was the first thing that had to happen for me, was that commitment.
This is so radical what you're saying. I just want to take a breath here, because I think that it's so in our collective consciousness that commitment is, of course, to the relationship, right? You know, and what you're saying is really deep, because I think what the two of you are modeling for us is about the importance of the context of the connection. And when you have the right context, how the relationship then lines up inside of that context. And so most people who are unconscious are going into relationship inside of the context of, I want to get my needs met. And then we kind of do a little bit of work on ourselves, and we kind of wake up and realize, oh, there's another person here, and oh, guess what, they have needs too. So now I guess I have to be, you know, committed to both of us getting our needs met, or to the relationship. But you're talking about something that is far beyond this, which is the deep devotion on a soul level to living in truth, to living in love, to evolving your own capacity to become the person you have the potential to be, and that commitment is the foundation of the relationship, that both of you are standing inside of that and coming together inside of that context. Am I catching this correctly?
Yes, you're absolutely accurate.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If you're committed to a relationship, it's not big enough. It's not big enough to hold what you're really after. It's not going to satisfy you. And you, context is a good word, too, because all the things that we're talking about are occurring in a context that's new. And the context is a new perceptual capability that's a part of human experience now. In other words, human consciousness is changing dramatically. It's already started this process. It's not something that's coming. We're in it now. And the change is that we're beginning to sense or experience ourselves and the world and others as more than our five senses can detect. So we're experiencing our world as not just random, or sometimes we have good luck and sometimes we have bad luck, but it's meaningful, always offering opportunities to grow spiritually. We're beginning to experience the universe as not just the physical universe, but as something far larger even than the infinite physical universe. So that sounds like a paradox, but it's not. The head, the intellect doesn't understand it, but the heart does. And we're beginning to understand and sense ourselves as more than minds and bodies. So this is multi-sensory perception. It's another sensory system in addition to the sensory system of the five senses, what we can see and hear and taste and touch and smell. So this is the context in which we can now say words like soul, and it's meaningful. It's not theological or psychological or philosophical. It's real. It has to do with me. It has to do with you in some significant way that most people haven't found a vocabulary or an ability to express yet. But it has to do with your reason for being. It has to do with the most noble and healthy impulses in you. It has to do with why you are born. And you are born, let me put it this way, to give the gifts that your soul wants to give. And you can't do that if you're controlled by parts of your personality that you're not aware of. The parts of your personality that are creating destructively and painfully. For example, a part that's angry, or a part that's jealous, or a part that's resentful, or a part that gets weepy in order to manipulate or to control, or a part that feels superior and entitled, or a part that feels inferior and needing to please. Well, these are exactly the parts of your personality that keep you from having the soulful, loving, healthy, grounded relationship that we're talking about. And instead of relationships like marriage and business relationships and family relationships and all other relationships that are based on function, a new relationship has entered the human experience along with this new perception. And that is spiritual partnership. Partnership between equals for the purpose of spiritual growth. This was a relationship dynamic that was far too mature, far too complicated and simply unnecessary for a five-sensory species that was evolving by learning how to manipulate and control.
Surviving, merely surviving.
It was evolving by surviving and surviving by creating external power, the ability to control, the ability to manipulate things that are external. This is a relationship dynamic that is exciting because it is designed for multisensory humans. And hundreds of millions of humans are becoming multisensory right now. And within a few generations, the entire human species will.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful vision.
Yeah. And Catherine, I was thinking I wanted to talk about...
I'm sorry, Catherine. Did we interrupt you? Were you going to say something?
Well, I mean, the thing that I'm really aware of as I'm listening to you is that... the part of relationships that many people find to be a hornet's nest, the projections, the power struggles, the rewounding, falling into old painful patterns from the past. When you put it in terms of this larger picture, all of that just becomes food for self-transformation. And so all of those things that are coming up in the relationship, rather than negotiate like your needs and my needs, and it's recontextualizing that whole conversation for people, like, wow, what am I learning about myself, and how can I hold this need or start to give this need to myself or make it transparent in a way that's, I'm just noticing it's a whole different context from how so many of us have been doing relationship. And I'm even aware that, you know, in many ways a lot of marriage therapists are doing the old kind of paradigm that you're talking about, a whole different ball game here.
Mm-hmm. It is an entirely different ball game, and it's more than just old paradigm psychotherapy and relationship therapy. It is the difference between a dying consciousness and a consciousness that's being born. Dying consciousness is the consciousness of a five-sensory species, just like Linda said, that's evolving by surviving and surviving by creating external power. The new consciousness is the
Yes. And can I just say what I'm loving too? I don't want to interrupt you because I want to hear everything you're saying, but I like to just do it just so that we can all integrate what you're saying because it's so powerful.
Of course.
So I'm just hearing also, it's so grand on one level. Like, you're in the future, you're in these other dimensions, you're in the soul level, you're in your intuitive knowing, and it's so beyond the practical, and yet it's so grounded. And so authentic and so human. Like, just the way, you know, I'm hearing the story, Gary, where you came up to her and you said, like, I don't want to feel sexual energy to you, where you were vulnerable, you were authentic, you were emotionally available,
mm-hmm.
you were telling the truth in a place that was uncomfortable to tell the truth. And so I think that I just don't want to lose that part of it. For people, when they're going to, because I know people are going to start to try and pattern after you, as they well should, and hopefully they'll go on and download these beautiful gifts you have and start to learn from you even more. But it's that willingness to be in the lower chakras too, you know, the very deep, authentic, you know, negotiation of home and sexuality and truth and power, like authentic power, what power is. Thank you.
Right.
Authentic power is aligning your personality with your soul, with harmony and cooperation and sharing and reverence for life. But you're never in the future. You're never in grander domains that take you away from where you are. Only your consciousness can leave where you are. Where you always are is now. And creating authentic power always happens now. You can't do it in the past or in the future. And that requires that you become aware all of the destructive parts of your personality and challenge them instead of automatically act on them. Because when you react to them, you act as you have in the past and you create all the things you have in the past. But when you become aware of them through emotional awareness in terms of physical sensations in your body, then you give yourself the opportunity to step back from those experiences and challenge them. Respond to them by reaching for the most loving parts of your personality that you can access.
Rather than reacting the way you used to.
So instead of reacting from anger or jealousy, you could respond from gratitude or appreciation or patience or caring. This is the process of creating authentic power. This is what spiritual partners do. This is what everyone in the Earth School now needs to do in order to move into their full potential, which means move beyond the control of their fears. And spiritual partners help one another do that. They can't do it for one another, but they can support one another. Spiritual partnership is a partnership between equals for the purpose of spiritual growth. Mm-hmm. Spiritual partners know they are together for a reason. They know that they have souls, and then they know that the reason that they are together has to do with their souls.
Did you want to Say something. You were going to say something before.
Yeah, a couple of things. I wanted to, when Gary was talking about being multisensory, that we're all becoming multisensory and that we are more aware of our intuition. We're always, the way I see it is that we're always being guided by our intuition, but usually the parts of our personality that are based in fear keep us from even hearing anything or even noticing anything. So one thing, I'll give a couple of examples. When I met Gary, the first time when we were talking about it, he came up to me. I knew that something was happening and I was being connected with him. I knew it from a multisensory or intuitive way. And later on in the retreat, I actually heard the words, "He's the one," several times. And it was very powerful for me. And then I began, when I heard him speak the first time at the event, even though I'd read the books, I'd read both of his books, actually, The Dancing Wooly Masters and The Seat of the Soul, but when I heard him speak at the event, he was saying things that were just wonderful, but I was getting intuitive information about him. I knew things about him that he wasn't talking about. But then, very practically, I was in awe of Gary speaking to me in real ways, but then one day near the end of the retreat, I had so much pain in my solar plexus, and I did not know why. I had so much pain that I couldn't really walk. I had to sit down and lay down. And I kept asking, what is this? What is this pain? Because I knew it wasn't like I have to go to the hospital, or it wasn't like that. I just knew it was really strong physical sensations. And I kept asking, what is that? And it was really... I was given this information that I needed to heal the way how inferiority that I'd always had, the ways that I felt inferior, and I felt very inferior to Gary. The frightened parts, the fearful parts of myself felt so inferior to him because he had written these amazing books. And so I knew that pain was there to show me of the immensity of what I needed to heal in me. And it's sort of like, are you up for it? and I decided I was, and I wanted to heal that. I did not want to feel inferior or superior to anyone. And why not take on that inferiority that I felt with, challenging it and having a relationship, whatever it be, with Gary. So it was really powerful for me. What we're talking about is, yes, it is about multisensory perception. It's about opening to your intuition, but it's also very grounded. I remember the first thing after when we got together, when I actually moved to Mount Shasta, I realized that I felt like I was a jealous person. I'm going to give an example of that, of a jealous person. I felt like all my life I felt jealous, but I thought that's who I was. And when I realized, no, that's not who I am, that is a fear-based part of my personality that feels that way, and I have the power to change that in me. So I began to change that, and the first thing that I did in this particular case was Gary actually pointed it out to me one time. He said, I notice you are really disconnected from me. We were at a party, and I'm really disconnected, and I feel like you're pushing me away. What's going on? And it was the first time he asked me what I was feeling in my body. And what I was thinking, and I told him. And I realized, wow, that's the feeling and the thoughts that I've had all my life of feeling jealous, of being jealous. And I realized I have the power to change that. It has nothing to do with Gary or anyone else in that room. It had to do with me. Those feelings were brought up in me for me to look at. So I just wanted to say that it's been an ongoing journey of learning about these fear-based parts of my personality. Instead of trying to change Gary, I've been working on changing myself all this time. And not only Gary, but I've been working on changing myself rather than changing anyone else in the world. So.
Oh, that's so beautiful. So I'm hearing a lot of courage, actually, and I know that that's one of your foundations.
It is.
Yeah, can you just speak to how you define courage and what courage means?
Well, basically, it's the way we define it is stretching myself beyond the limited perspective of the fear-based parts of my personality. So in other words, not with, when I felt jealous, I let myself feel the pain of that, the pain in my body, the physical sensations. I noticed the thoughts, but I didn't let it define me. I didn't let it take me over. I decided to choose to look at things in a different way, to feel it fully, and to choose to be loving, to choose to not let that fear of jealousy take me over again, control me.
You know, it's just occurring as you're speaking that when we get defensive and we try and cover these parts of ourselves, I'm not jealous, I just don't think you should have been blah, 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 you know, whatever that is.
Right.
But basically what we're doing is aligning ourselves with that consciousness.
With our fear, that's right.
With the fear, we're aligning with the fear. Whenever we try and, you know, pretend that we don't feel that, or we justify or defend or something against it. And so it sounds like this constant choice to align with truth and to trust the process of life and to trust truth and to align with love and to not overly identify with these parts of the self either. So I'm really also hearing both of you be so transparent about these things in a way that's not shame-based.
Oh, not at all, Catherine. In fact, the only shame there is another fear-based part of the personality that feels jealous, I mean, that feels
shame.
Embarrassed, that yeah. feels shame, that feels any of that has to do with fear. It's not who you are. Your soul doesn't have, your loving parts of your personality don't feel that way. Only fear-based
Beautiful.
Parts feel that way.
So you're disidentifying with that part without dissociating from it or without burying it, or and that's where the compassion part comes in. Yeah, so like
that's nicely said. Yes, disassociating without disconnecting.
Disidentifying.
Disidentifying that's even better, which means, yes, before you were identified with it. When you're in a frightened part of your personality, it seems like the whole world's that way. When we lived in Mount Shasta, and it would snow in Mount Shasta in that alpine environment, it seemed like it's snowing all over the world.
It must be, right?
There's no doubt. But it's not. It's only right there. And we could drive outside of Mount Shasta, and in 30 minutes we'd be on dry road again. Because we were in a microclimate. And that's what a frightened part of the personality is. It's a microclimate. But you think it's a whole world. But when you disidentify with it, you can still feel it. In fact, you don't have a choice. It's still there. You feel all of it. You think what it's thinking. But at the same time, you realize this is one part of your personality, and you need not be controlled by it. You can instead respond from a loving part of your personality. And that takes courage. That's stretching yourself beyond the limited perspectives of the frightened parts of you, the fear-based parts of your personality, because they are the ones that are creating pain and destruction. If something is not love, it's fear. Shame, for example, is not love. So you know just intellectually that it's fear, but you also know it because when you feel it, it's painful.
Indeed.
And then you can act from something else than guilt and shame and remorse.
So what I'm hearing you say is that these kind of there's choices that are being made, and there are skills that are being cultivated in your relationship with yourself that's happening as the foundation then for this next piece, which is the conscious communications and conscious actions. That there's self-awareness, there's self-inquiry, there's the ability to have the feelings, name the feelings, but disidentify with the feelings. There's a soul spiritual alignment to truth, a sense of purpose at the foundation. All these things are going on inside of you that are then become the foundation for how you're relating to each other. Am I catching that correctly?
Yes.
Absolutely, you are. And this is the sense in which I look at calling in the one. What does that mean, the one? what I feel calling in the wand means you. You are becoming the one. And until you call in that one, until you become authentically powerful, you're not going to see that or appreciate it in anyone else. And as you do, you begin to see it and appreciate it in everyone else. You begin to see the world as a world of miracles instead of a world of carnage and destruction and deceit and pain. You begin to see the universe as meaningful and gracious and beneficent. So calling in the one is something that most people, I think, and I'm not sure, probably think I'm calling in the one who's going to complete me, the one who's going to make my life fuller, richer, the one who's going to do all those things. But you are the one that is making your life more complete, more full, more rich, more expanded, more healing, more loving, more accepting. And as you do that, you begin to see that the search for a soulmate is sort of like a fish searching for water. Or you have.
That's brilliant.
You have seven or by now maybe 8 billion soulmates on this earth.
Uh-huh.
8 billion of them, 7 billion of them, most of whom you will never lay your eyes on. The question becomes, how are you going to relate to those that do cross your path? That would be for you to choose. Spiritual partners choose their own roles in their partnership. For example, Linda and I are monogamous. Linda and I have defined how our spiritual partnership will be. But everyone's spiritual partnership with other spiritual partners will be as the spiritual partners define them. So we have defined ourselves as a dyadic spiritual partnership. We live together. We create together. We co-create together. We talk to people that we love talking to, like you and the people who are listening to what we're sharing. We create events. We sleep together. We wake together. We eat together. Our lives are together. But it's not in a dependent or a way, because Linda knows that she can't heal my demons, the frightened parts of my personality. She can't address the parts of my personality that feel superior and entitled, impatient. And I can't address the frightened parts of her personality, but she can help me exercise my own demons. That's the creation of authentic power. And pardon me, Bob.
Yeah, I was thinking one of the reasons that I feel that when someone, if you call in the one, so you have a partner, now how are you going to be in that partnership? You have to decide that, because if it's going to be in the old way, then you're not going to have anything different than you've had in other relationships. So what you were saying is that it's radically different from the way that most people think of relationships, what we mean by spiritual partnership, because I'm really looking at myself and changing myself. So in our relationship, anything that if Gary brings up something in me, if he triggers me, we could call it, if he activates fear in me.
Activates a frightened part of your
personality.
Right.
Then I know that it's my job to change that in me, to feel that, to notice that, and to choose to respond rather than to react from fear. I know that's my, and it's my ongoing challenge in my life for every moment, but I know that that is the purpose. And the reason that I'm here on the earth is to challenge all the fear in me so that eventually, well, for instance, the jealousy that I was talking about was so strong in me when I first met Gary. It was so strong that it really defined me. You know, I really felt like I can't help it. I'm a jealous person. However, now I would say that that part of me is so, it's really basically non-existent. If it ever comes up, if I ever notice it, I can laugh. It's like, oh, there you are again. Not a problem. You know, I can feel it, notice it, but it's lost its power because I don't feed it anymore. I don't feed it by acting on it.
Well, and it sounds like you've challenged the assumptions, the consciousness that are underneath it, which I'm hearing as possibly being the inferiority. I'm inferior to others, and so, you know, other women are better than me, so why wouldn't I be jealous? If that were like a fact of nature, you know, why wouldn't I be jealous? But if you challenge the whole concept of inferiority and you begin to realize that each of us is truly precious in our own right and deserves to be celebrated, you begin to have a different relationship, it would disappear the jealousy. I mean, brilliant.
It would, Catherine, but much more disappears.
Yeah, I must say, Catherine, though, I still notice the inferiority sometimes, and I need to challenge that, which doesn't really have to do with jealousy so much. It really has to do with because it was such a strong part of my personality to feel inferior. But in that feeling of inferiority, it could flip to superiority so quickly.
I have that too. And it's so ingrained in our culture to be in a hierarchy all the time. Some of the things that we're deconstructing personally, I think we're doing, you know, as a service in consciousness for thousands of other people too.
Yeah, I think we're all supporting each other, aren't we? Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah,
Every time we challenge a part of ourselves that isn't really who we are, that's only based in fear, it's such a beautiful gift.
Isn't every time you have the thought that I'm doing something that develops my consciousness and I'm doing it for someone else in service, isn't that an assumption really that doesn't happen all the time, everywhere, that every time you expand your own consciousness into more richness and love and acceptance and appreciation, you do it for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And as you become multisensory, you begin to see that. You begin to see that. And you
mm-hmm.
begin to see in deeper context than inferiority and superiority. All of those exist. All of them are real. They're all your avenues to spiritual growth. In other words, in a conventional relationship from marriage or any other kind of five-sensory relationship, people brace against the pain. They try to cover it up. They don't want to rock the boat. When you're in a spiritual partnership, you fasten your seatbelt.
I love
because
that.
Yeah. If you don't need the seatbelt fastened sometimes, you're not doing it right. You're trying to avoid something. You're trying to avoid saying something that you're embarrassed about or ashamed of, or you're trying to manipulate and control someone you love. So spiritual partnerships bring up all the things within us. Now, the basic thing is not just inferiority or superiority, it's worthiness.
Mm-hmm.
The basic pain.
Mm-hmm.
The basic pain
right.
that everyone experiences is the pain of powerlessness,
mm-hmm.
the pain of wanting to belong and not belonging, the pain of wanting to be loved and feeling unlovable, the pain of wanting to love and knowing that you're not capable of loving. It's the pain of knowing that you're intrinsically flawed, that you're inherently defective, that you don't want anyone to be able to see you inside the way you see yourself because they wouldn't want anything to do with you. It's too painful and shameful. That is the pain of powerlessness, and everybody has it. And in the past, we have all tried to mask that pain by reaching outward to change the world. That's the pursuit of external power, manipulation, control. But now we're in new evolutionary territory. And when we experience the pain of powerlessness and we look for it, we don't want to mask it. We don't want to act on it because that's acting on fear and it creates only violence and destruction. Instead, we look inward to change in ourselves what needs to be changed and change that rather than looking outward at what we think needs to be changed in the world to make us feel better about ourselves, including worthy.
Yes.
Beautiful. Well, I just want to thank you both for pioneering this new paradigm for us all and for being a part of our community and sharing this vision. I think what I'm almost feeling in my body, how this is landing for a lot of us, which is like a sense of relief, like, wow, thank you. I've been feeling this, and I haven't had a name for it, and I haven't had models for it. And I think a lot of people who find their way into the Calling in the One community feel like they've been living in kind of an either-or world, like either I get to have those old kind of hornet's nest relationships that are filled with, you know, disempowering patterns, or I get to be alone to protect my mission and my passion. And I think what is opening up in this conversation is a true embodied vision of this new alternative that all of us here, I'm just going to speak on behalf of everyone here, are standing for creating in our lives. So thank you for naming it for us. And I want to know how people can continue the conversation with you. You've created something so lovely for us.
Right. We have a page that we'd love to share with you that includes these, as you said, the four foundations of soul love. We call them the Authentic Power Guidelines.
And also, we haven't had time, but this talk has been so fundamental to a book that a book of ours called Spiritual Partnership. And that goes over exactly and introduces in different ways, new ways, the authentic power guidelines and the spiritual partnership guidelines are the same. We call them one or the other.
And Catherine, you call them the four foundations of soul love.
The four foundations. Mm-hmm. When we first created them, we called them one, and then we realized, but they're indistinguishable. Creating authentic power and spiritual partnership. So just go to seatofsoul.com.
Yeah.
Seatofsoul.com, and that will give you access to all of this and all of the books.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you both.
Yeah.
And thank you for all you're doing, Catherine.
Yeah, really. So beautiful. Thank you.
Bringing people together.
Well, you contextualize my work and our work together, what we're doing at Calling in the One, which is that inner development to be able to create it is that you're modeling for us, you know, the self-empowered self-reflection and this deep relationship with oneself and authenticity and telling the truth and all of these, you know, the emotional intelligence, being able to distinguish what we're feeling and be responsible and getting out of victimization and all of these things that I'm really hearing are the foundations that will allow us to realize the greater potentials of our relationships. So thank you so much. I love you both. I'm so happy that you exist and that you're together and that you're now a part of our family. And
Catherine,
really
thank you. I don't remember having an interview where we spoke with someone for an hour, and at the end of that time, she was able to see and reach so deeply into what we're sharing, and represent it or present it. It's just a joy to speak with you. Thank you.
It's been really wonderful, Catherine. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Lots of love to both of you. Bye bye.
And to you. Bye bye.
Bye bye.